Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker tov, shavua tov. So many things to talk about, Howard. And I know we've got a few things that we've planned, you know, the meaty things. But just one thing that I can't avoid mentioning that I picked up is the story about the number of people who have flocked the Office of the Chambers of Commerce in Gaza over the last week in order to apply for work permits to come and work in Israel. And they're talking about tens of thousands of people having really massed upon these offices across the Gaza Strip in order to try to lay their hands on a coveted work permit so that they can come and work in Israel. People from Gaza have not been allowed to work in Israel for the last 15 years. And now there's been a change of situation, and apparently there are going to be work permits issued, obviously each one coming with huge checks into people's background vetting process in order to make sure that there are no so-called bad actors, people who wish to use their permit for terrorist activities. But when you look at the economic situation in the Gaza Strip, it's just astonishing to understand that the Hamas administration are using all this money to construct tunnels and to store weapons and to acquire all kinds of ammunition when they've got 50% unemployment and daily wages at around $10 to $12 a day for people, those who actually are able to work. It's a really amazingly sad situation. Even people with university degrees unable to work, you know, and those who do work earning measly sums of money. And so this is where they say you vote with your feet, and people are literally descending upon these offices in order to try to get themselves work permits to come and work in Israel. And I mean, it works well both ways because there are employment opportunities for people who are serious about coming to work rather than to cause trouble. And in the same way, it would be a massive contribution to the Gazan economy. So let's hope somehow that sense can prevail and that this can be turned into something really good.
What has changed? Why now? Why after 15 years has this opened up again?
I think that this is part of the talks that are going on between Hamas and Israel indirectly via the Egyptians interlocutors trying to create a so-called longer-term situation where peace can prevail, a period of quiet. I know that we've also been talking about the exchange of prisoners as part of the same discussions that have been taking place with the Egyptians very much at the forefront. So I think that this is just part of that overall process, not much of which is being talked about in the press. I know that there have been some articles about the prisoner exchange, but really the meat of this discussion doesn't seem to be advertised much in the press, but there seems to be quite a lot of action going on behind the scenes, which is exactly the way that business should be done.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And, of course, the big story is that German Chancellor Angela Merkel is in Israel on her final foreign trip before leaving office. Incredible statements coming out of this visit. What is the actual purpose, though, of the visit?
Well, she was due to have visited Israel in August, but because of the whole situation in Afghanistan and other things that have gone on, her visit was postponed. And I don't know that it was originally designed to be her final overseas trip before she leaves office, because, of course, in August that would have been before the German election, and I'm guessing that she might have had some other trips planned after that. But as it turns out, her trip to Israel was also the very first foreign trip that Angela Merkel undertook when she took office almost 16 years ago. And it's turning out to be the last one as well. So a kind of a poignant, interesting situation that has arisen as a result of her trip. She's here for 2 days. The German government and the Israeli government have had this ongoing tradition process that they've put in place where the various cabinets meet with each other once in Israel, once in Germany, in order to try to promote a cooperation between the two governments at a working level. So this is about, you know, the working level people getting together in order to try to promote a greater cooperation, greater trade between the two countries. Angela Merkel said a very fascinating thing. And what she said was that she doesn't think that the relationship with Israel needs to be based upon the history and the aftermath of the Holocaust, that it's more than that. Now, it's controversial to some people, and it's logical to others that this is the way that things should be. And another poignant moment that took place yesterday when Angela Merkel visited Yad Vashem, accompanied by Naftali Bennett, the Prime Minister. At some point during her visit, she requested to be left alone. She asked her security guards and those accompanying her to leave her, and she spent some private time at Yad Vashem. I would love to have been a fly on the wall of her mind at that moment, wondering what she was thinking, wondering what she was going through during those few moments that she had on her own without the interruption of the entourage and other people around her. I think that we have a fascinating situation in our relationship with Germany and with Germans in general. I think that there are so many Germans of the current generation who live with immense guilt about what went down during the period of the Shoah. Many of them have even greater guilt because they know that members of their own family might have been involved in persecution of the Jews as part of the Nazi regime, the Nazi machine that persecuted, and they live with this massive guilt. Others feel antagonistic towards Israel because of the reparations and because of the extent to which Germany has had to burden and shoulder responsibility. And when I say Germany, I'm talking about current generation Germany rather than those who are actually responsible for undertaking these activities. It's a very interesting discussion and analysis to do. But I think Angela Merkel has been an amazing friend to Israel. She has really done whatever she can to develop relationships with the various governments that have been in power over the 16 years that she's been Chancellor of Germany. I think she's created a very, very big pair of shoes for the person who will succeed her to jump into, not only as Chancellor of Germany, but indeed as one of the great world leaders that we've seen in our generation. And she, you know, has, I think, done an amazing job of developing the relationship with Israel. We certainly have a very good relationship with Germany, good trade, you know, very friendly relations. And of course, the issue of the Iran nuclear deal was definitely on the table. She said that she feels that Iran should come back to the table and rejoin the nuclear agreement. She thinks that that is better than what is happening at the moment, which is Iran's just developing, it's just enriching its uranium without any seeming control, without anything being really done in the international community. And she thinks that having an agreement which Iran adheres to, assuming that it would adhere to an agreement, would be a lot better than the current situation. So some really fascinating comments from Angela Merkel, and a great picture of her with the female members of the Israeli cabinet and Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, of course, just as a show of girl power. And of course, the Israeli lady politicians, members of government, feeling very empowered by Angela Merkel and her visit to Israel.
Yeah, I'm just so impressed. I'm just so blown away by her dignity, by her introspection, by her wisdom. And I didn't know that story of that she wanted to be left alone at Yad Vashem. I thought that was just absolutely, really, absolutely incredible. Palestinians have expressed outrage over an Israeli court ruling that that quiet prayer by a Jew is allowed on the Temple Mount. Tell us about this.
So this was a court hearing that was held last week on Wednesday, where the Jerusalem Magistrates Court heard an appeal by a Jewish visitor to the Temple Mount who had actually been removed and distanced from the Temple Mount, not allowed to return for a period of 15 days after police ordered him to stop praying on the Temple Mount during a visit on Yom Kippur. That was the original hearing. The police decided that he should be distanced from the Temple Mount for a period of 15 days, and he decided to take this to court in order to appeal that that distancing order, even though it's obviously already expired, given that 15 days have passed since Yom Kippur. And apparently, the justice on the magistrates' court bench in Jerusalem, Justice Bilha Yahalom, watched a recording of the incident, and she decided that the behavior by this individual did not violate the law, nor did it violate police instructions on the Temple Mount, as he was praying on his own without a crowd and quietly in a way that was not even visible and not external. And so she decided that others praying in that way quietly do not actually contravene any of the rules, do not contravene any of the laws. The police, of course, cited security concerns and have in the past, as we already have discussed, imposed this blanket prohibition on Jewish prayer on the Temple Mount. Now, I think that this, and of course, then we have the response from the Jordanians and from the Palestinians and from everybody else, of course, criticizing this court ruling, some of them deciding that this is flagrant violation of international legitimacy, and it oversteps the status quo on the Temple Mount and at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and that Israeli courts in any event don't have the right to make rulings about what goes on in the Temple Mount, because this is the sole area that the Waqf, the Muslim Council, has the right to decide upon. And so lots and lots of very, very extreme reactions. But the only thing that I found to be logical, understandable, and sensible in this whole story is the way that the judge summed up the situation. And she said that even though there is prohibition upon prayer on the Temple Mount, the way that this man went about it did not attract any outside attention. He was not trying in any way to conjure up a situation. He was just simply there on his own, praying quietly, no minyan, no shofar blowing, no birkat hakohanim or any show of any crowd, just simply doing things on his own, apparently something that this individual has been doing already for some time. He's been a regular visitor to the Temple Mount and likes to go and pray there. And I think that this is entirely sensible, that individuals who go along and do their own thing without attracting attention, without creating a rumpus, without trying to get a crowd, should be entitled to do that. And I can absolutely understand this judge's ruling, and I think that there should be no reason why other people shouldn't accept it and agree with it as well.
Kathy's asking, are other religions permitted to pray in the Jewish section of the Kotel?
When you visit the Kotel, you are not required to show your identity, who you are, where you come from, what religion you follow. I happened to be at the Kotel a week or so ago, and I noticed that there were two African men who were proudly showing on their shirt that they'd come from whichever country, I can't remember, was it the Cameroon or something like that? They had identifying T-shirts, and they were very proud to go into the men's section of the Kotel according to the rules. They took a kippah to cover their head, which is the tradition at the Kotel, and they went in, and they had their moments right next to the wall, which to them seemed very, very meaningful. Nobody examines you when you go to the Kotel to find out which particular political leaning you may have or religious leaning or what your intentions are, as long as you come and you behave in an appropriate way and you respect the place, you're at all entitled to come along. No restrictions whatsoever.
Yeah, it's such an interesting one. It's so, and so volatile, isn't it? Because it's just an opportunity taken as well. And that's, I guess, the part that bothers me the most is, does it really impact on somebody negatively if someone's standing there and praying quietly, or is this just a way to cause more conflict?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why there is sensitivity about people going to the Kotel and trying to attract attention, trying to make a political point. And that could in turn create a conflict, which we would prefer to avoid where possible. But I think there is a difference between those people who are trying to come and make a political statement and to attract attention and to potentially rile the situation up, as opposed to individuals who simply come and do their own thing quietly. Nobody has to know about it. It's between them and their God, between them and whoever they are associating with. Nobody else really needs to know about it, and I don't understand why that should be prohibited.